Hello and welcome to another edition of Living with Dying. Today I'm very honoured to be joined by John Adams, who is really well known in the funeral and death and dying area because he's a fourth generation funeral director of Perry and Phillips in Shropshire. He's the former president of the National Association of Funeral Directors, and he's really well known for being a campaigner for bereavement education in schools. And you've achieved great success with that, John, haven't you? So I'd like to talk about that in a while. But can we start with you? What got you into this area in the first place? I mean, obviously, you're fourth generation of funeral directors. Does that mean you grew up in a funeral home?
Yes, I grew up in this environment from a very young age. Obviously, my dad receiving phone calls during the dinner, and we all have to just be silent straight away, understanding the importance of these phone calls. And then through to Christmas days, dad going out at 6:30 in the morning, 7 o'clock in the morning, and not returning back until 5 p.m. And having an understanding when I was probably very young, actually how important it is what he was doing, and never being upset or bitter or angry that he wasn't there for those periods of time, because I knew he was helping people. So I had an understanding how important it was. I would then come in to work with him on Saturdays in the workshop, in the mortuary, being around people who have died. Chris, my dad, asking me for my advice and what I thought on certain things. So just being in that environment and having a very close relationship with him, and then moving forward, the death of my mum, Maria. She died when I was 12, and she was diagnosed with terminal cancer when I was 6 years old. So for me, it's been very much around me. It's formed part of who I am. And the death of my mum, obviously very sad and traumatic as it is for all young people who go through this. And I think I saw the level of communication, how all other areas of communication from outside my family home, there was none. It was very strange. I found it quite bizarre. And like growing up, going into funerals after serving almost a decade in the Royal Navy, coming back out the Navy, going to my qualifications, going into the National Exec Committee of NEFD. And again, like all this time learning about people, learning about myself, learning more about communication, learning more about how we empower people, and by what happens when we do involve young people, I saw it by just little touches with giving people confidence, the family, the tools to help them incorporate children in these conversations. And then I saw the outcomes, and it was beautiful. Families were connected, and actually they moved forward in a very positive way. Then I started looking into what bereavement policies there were in schools, and there was none. It was inconsistent. So then it's worth thinking, well, why isn't there something in place? A strong sense of justice, wanting things right, responsibility. And then being invited to become president of the National Association of Funeral Directors, that gave me a platform, sort of national position, to really drive forward a message. I wasn't there for just the ceremonial status, far from it. I'm there to try and achieve good work. I'm fully aware we're not here for forever. So whilst we're here, let's get some work done. Let's get some positive things done. Let's try and improve any environment that we find ourselves in. So that position gave me a platform to really deliver this message. And 5 months into my presidency, I launched a petition to add content on death, dying, and bereavement into the education system. And I knew at the point of pressing the button on proceed and for the application, there was no going back, but I was all in. I was all in. And it's been a very interesting 4 years now since that was done, what's happened and how it's all moved forward. And actually, how I'm still learning as well, and learning more about death, learning more about bereavement, learning more about grief and people. It's fascinating. So that gives you a bit of an insight into the journey to this point, really.
And you obviously hit a nerve, didn't you? Because you got the results, your petition. How long did it take a long time to grow, or did it happen quickly?
So it launched, and the first 6 weeks, it was fairly quiet. Obviously, I did a video, went online, had sort of 15,000 views in a few days, but people were sort of questioning it, saying, "Well, I don't quite get it. And even an extended member of my family, a cousin, he was saying, "Are you sure this is a good idea? Why don't we just let kids be children? Well, it's not putting more pressure on them." But it was like that inner belief, that inner drive. And that's not stubbornness or arrogance. It's a pure vision. You can see the outcome on society when we have conversations. There's so many positives, such as we can live our own lives in a more positive way. We can treat our family with more gratitude for what we have, kindness, awareness that actually someone in our environment could be struggling, and that could be at school, that could be at work. Having an understanding that if someone's struggling, their outcomes and actions will always be different because we are all different. So it's just creating more awareness in society and in the UK. And now what's very interesting is these conversations are now going overseas. And on Friday, I fly to New Zealand to have conversations and to speak at the Funeral Association conference in Auckland. So there is interest. But initially, there were doubts, and even members of the National Association of Funeral Directors, they weren't too sure of what it was all about. But then I was approached by the BBC to do a piece, and it went on BBC Breakfast, the actual article did, and I went on BBC Breakfast. And after that, I noticed what happened after that. I went to the petrol station a few days afterwards, and the lady in there was like, "John, you're totally right, you're totally right." And it was kind of like the shift, and it shows you the power of media and actually credibility. And unfortunately, in this world, people follow people. So again, after that, I started to understand that we need to create a community and build a community of people who supported this. And people found me, I found people, we built this community, funeral directors as well. I was very much, my messaging was very much like, make it your petition, not mine. Don't make this about me. And again, it's about how we empower people to say, you can do this as well. You can make changes in your area. And it was wonderful and quite beautiful to see how people came together, and we achieved the result. And it closed in May 2023 with 11,322 signatures. So we needed 10,000 signatures to get a response from Parliament, which was always the goal, because to get 100,000 signatures, that would initiate a debate in Parliament. But I was aware to get that, you need constant mainstream TV and a big budget, and we didn't have either of those. So 10,000 was the objective. But then a year later, whilst the response was going through and a consultation was now taking place, which was great news for the curriculum, that I received direct communication from Parliament, from the Petitions Committee, to say they'd seen the value and the worth and the media attention around this, and now they decided to debate the petition in Parliament. So on December the 2nd, 2024, at 5:30 p.m., it was debated in Parliament. And it was fascinating and quite surreal to see MPs discuss their own experiences of grief and bereavements, and even to hear my mum's name mentioned as well so often in the chamber was very special to hear that, to hear she's been the driving force behind it, really.
So you've achieved your goal and education is now going on in schools, which is wonderful. But before we talk about exactly how it works, can you just tell me about your experience when you went back into school as a 12-year-old after your mother had died?
I found it difficult. I found it's like the elephant in the room. Everyone's aware, but no one is sure what to say. And that's no one's fault. That's societal. I received a card from a friend of mine, Adam Hirons, at that time. And I remember it very, it still means a lot to me now, 25 years on. And again, it shows the power of showing up and turning up, and just a simple act of communication and care and compassion goes such a long way. So I remember feeling quite isolated, feeling quite lonely. And yeah, I didn't want to be at school. My sister was very different. She just went back into school. Again, we're all unique, we're all different. I'm a very sensitive boy, and I just didn't want to be there. Simple as that, really. My dad wrote to the school to say what had happened to our mum. And a few months later, the head of my year got in touch with my dad to say, is everything okay at home? Because John's performance in class has dipped. So again, that was another example of communication not happening. I imagine the letter came through. It's probably a difficult conversation to have, so it was just put in the top drawer. So there was missed opportunities, and my belief is that the difficult conversations are usually the most important in life, and we have to have those. That's how we move forward as a society, as a family, as a relationship, in business. No matter what you're doing, you need to have the ability to sit down and have uncomfortable conversations, and quite quickly you'll find that life gets better.
So presumably you wanted the curriculum to provide everything that you didn't get, basically.
It's not about me. I'm not doing it because of what I didn't have. I'm not bitter one bit, because I understand that it's not people haven't got the ability. Children my age, and even adults. When I grew up, I discovered that lots of people who are like my mum's friends, they're all cheering you on as a young person, but you're not seeing it, you're not feeling it. They're all on the sidelines almost, and that's no one's fault. That's cultural. That's societal. So I think it's not about what happened to me. It's basically I understand what can be done to get us in a better position. So I'm not really looking back. I'm looking forwards. I'm very excited about the prospects. And if the 12-year-old John, if it's like a conversation I can have with him to say, "There you go, mate, that's for you," then that's great as well. But it's not for that. It's for future. It's for people who are going to be bereaved, who aren't bereaved yet. That's what excites me, is to create an environment which is more connected, where there is more compassion, there is more awareness, and we can't stop bad things from happening. That's the reality of life. But what we can do, we can put some mechanics in place so people have an understanding of what to do. There are still schools now, teachers get in touch with me saying that they were told by their heads, "Don't discuss this topic. Don't discuss that so and so's mum has died. Leave that. Don't touch that." That's happening still right now in 2026. That's still happening. So the fact now it's been announced it's going into the curriculum, I find it very exciting now. It's not about disrupting, it's about doing the right thing. So yeah.
And how do you see it being taught in the curriculum? What kinds of things must they cover?
Well, I was asked to go and do a session at the primary school that I attended 2 weeks ago, where my son's now attends. That was quite surreal going back there. And the session that I presented to them was about death, dying, bereavement, funerals, and grief. And so it all sounds very morbid, and I think some teachers get quite anxious the thought of it. But it was so positive. And I used the word death in the first couple of minutes. That's very important. Address the elephants, not slipped away or fallen asleep or someone's now a star. They have died. And that's what I do. That's what my family do. We look after people who have died. We take care of them. We feel very privileged to be in that position to help people at their darkest time. I showed them what a hearse was. I took a toy hearse in there to the class and showed them about what this vehicle is, and it's a lot bigger usually. And I took a top hat in there to show them what we wear and why we wear it. Not because we're special, but actually it's so people can see who to go to and have a question. So it gives authority. But we're just normal people trying our best with people. And that's what a funeral director does. I spoke about grief. What actually is grief? The emotion. It's how it's confusing, how people will do things differently. How some people will want to talk, some people won't want to talk, but actually, as a friend, we need to adapt to what people need and not take it personally. And then, actually, a big part of the session was about kindness, about showing up. What can we do? And I split the classroom into three. Group one did, what could your class do for someone or a family who are struggling? What could you do? Group two did, what could the school do for an individual or a family who are struggling? Group three, what could the wider community do for a person or a family who are struggling? And that doesn't have to be just bereavements. It could be a member of their family have gone away on a deployment on board a warship for 9 months, like I did. It could be that someone's family circumstances have changed. I didn't use the word divorce, but that's what it's coming on to, family dynamics change. So it could be any of these things, guys, but think grief underneath it all. And I explained grief can form part of that as well. So grief comes in different forms. So we broke into that. But the response from these groups was just wonderful. One of the children for the community said we could put benches around the town, and if someone's feeling lonely, they could sit on that bench, and then other people will know they could go and support them. And at the end of it, after getting all these information, all these ideas, I said to them all, "Who's excited now and here about how you, every person in this room now, can make a change in your environment? You can do it right here in this classroom right now. How exciting is that now that you have the ability to do that? You don't need to go on a plane to New Zealand to make changes to the world. You can do it right here, as powerful, if not even more powerful." So don't underestimate your actions, how important they are for negative or positive outcome. You can affect how someone sleeps at night. So just think about how important it is what you speak about, what you do, how you treat people. So that's what I see. And schools will have opportunity to get training now from providers. There'll be providers that can come in to help with sessions if it's too overwhelming for the school at this stage, but long term to form part of the teacher training so it's embedded into how teachers communicate.
I bet you got some good questions from those kids. Did you? What
Oh,
ages were they? What did they ask?
there are some wonderful questions. So my son Jack is 8, so it's 8 and 9 year olds. Questions varied from, do I find it difficult being around people that are sad? And my response was, it can be challenging, but we never forget how much of a privilege it is. And that isn't some corporate answer. I went into the depths of it. Actually, sometimes it is hard. And another child asked, "Have you ever cried? Do you ever cry in your job?" And I said, "I have before. I gave an example of one of my friends that died a few years ago, tears in my eyes because it was very hard. And that weight, that pressure you put on yourself to help them all." I had an amusing question to this. One question was, who pays for your flights when you do talks overseas? I thought, wow, fair play to him. So that was amusing. But there's lots of questions. There are lots of questions around death, about kindness. What could the school do more? I gave scenarios about when I joined my first warship, walking down the two deck of the corridor, saying good morning to somebody. And no, I said good morning, and the person who was a lot older, he just ignored me. And I found that fascinating. It didn't affect me. I just thought, what a waste of space. But I said, when you joined reception, guys, how did you feel? Were you nervous? Were you a little bit anxious? And they're like, yeah. I said, imagine if now the people who join reception next year, if you guys be in the year four or year five or year six, if when you go into that, imagine how you'd make them feel if you go and see the children joining reception saying, "Hiya, I'm so and so. Welcome to our school. I'll show you where your peg is. I'll show you what to do. I'll show you where the dinner hall is. I'll stay with you for your lunch." Imagine how you'd feel. Would you like that? Would you have liked that when you joined reception? And they're like, yeah. I said, well, why can't you do it now? Don't do things just because it wasn't done for you. Let's all start thinking about what else we can do in our environments to help other people. And ask if someone's okay and if they know where to go and show them where the toilets are, where the lunch hall is. That's not hard. That's not difficult. And for that guy to say good morning back to me on that warship, in my opinion, there's no excuse why he wouldn't say good morning to me, other than the fact that he wasn't treated well when he joined the warship. And that's culture and society again. So we need to start breaking these down, and people need to start stepping up in society and taking responsibility for their own actions. And simple acts of kindness go a very long way.
It would be wonderful to be able to find out in a year or two the difference you'd made by simply talking like that to that class, wouldn't it?
Yes, it would be. It would be. I've been asked to go back to other classes in the school and to other schools, but I've always been hesitant of that because I think, to achieve bigger pieces of work, you shouldn't try and do it at all. You want to empower people to do the work, not try and I'll do it. So you want to create a community again to do this special work. But I'm happy to do bits and pieces to show people how special it can be. And to remove some of the stigma and anxiety around these conversations, they're the most positive conversations we can have.
And that's what I was going to come on to, really, that the work you're doing and the work I'm doing is to encourage people to demystify the whole thing about death, isn't it? And I'm wondering if you felt those children felt less fearful, perhaps, about the idea of using the word death, of using dying, talking about it, knowing that it will happen to their relatives.
I believe so. I believe so. They were talking about in the afterwards amongst the questions about their own experiences of animals and pets that have died. So they're already aware, and that's what I've said for some years now. Children aren't daft. You know, death is all around them in the films they watch, the books they read. I think most Disney films have has a certain level of separation in them. So we're not teaching them anything new. We're just exploring what they already know. And just going into more depth in a very protective, in an age-appropriate way, spoke with kindness and love and compassion. So yeah, I believe things will get a lot clearer and a lot easier for them. And I think it's society has built put these barriers in place. As we have done it to ourselves, where we sort of get tense having conversations around this. And I see it here. I see it with arranging funerals. I see it when young people. I'll sit with a family, I'll give an example for older generations, and say to them, regarding coming to see your person, your mum, your dad, your brother, your sister, your wife, just so you're aware, there is the opportunity, and I'm only saying this to you to make you aware what is possible, but there is the opportunity for you to be there when we close the coffin for the last time. And I say to them, a lot of people, when I say this, might think, oh gosh, not for me. I said, but what I will say, the people who have done this, it gives them so much reassurance and helps them move forward with their grief in what I see in a more positive way. And usually the response is, I don't think so, not for us. So that's fine. I have a responsibility to let you know. Quite often, after that seed has been sown, they'll say, actually, we'd like to do that, John. And when what I see, the moments we have together in the chapel arrest, closing the coffin, it's so powerful. It's so beautiful. It's sad. It's hard, but there's so much love in the room. And I think the definition of a funeral service is changing in society. A funeral service for me is a space, is a platform to allow people to move forward with their grief. And I think now it's about experience, about different connection points along that route of someone dying through to the point of saying goodbye physically. And there's lots of things we can do amongst that sort of journey. And what I was with someone last year, a young man took his own life, and his best friend arranged the funeral. And he had the same response: "Oh no, not for me, John. I don't want to close the coffin for the last time." He actually did it in the end. He asked me about it. Could he actually do it? I said, "Of course you can." And I walked with this friend the next day in front of the hearse. He walked in front of the hearse with me, and we were just talking quietly. And he said to me, "Do you know what we did yesterday? I feel like the healing's already started for me. Like today, now, it's already done." And it's very interesting because he dealt with a lot of that stuff the day before. So the funeral day itself changed for him. The impact changed for him. A lot of his grief had already started to be processed in that saying goodbye, the closure. So I think we need to look at and redefine what a funeral service is, especially as we move to this unattended direct cremation movement. And actually, we need to understand that doing difficult things, as I said right at the start, that's how we move forward in life. I think death is like the ultimate taboo in the Western world, in my opinion. And it's been built up that way because of the unknowns associated and affiliated with it. And what I see is that unknowns create fear. And that comes in all forms in life. If you're moving house, if you're getting divorced, if you're getting married, well, changing job. It's the unknowns, we get scared, we get fearful. So if we start giving people information which is correct in a very safe way, in an authentic way, then surely that's how we move forward in society and in our own lives as well. So for me, it's very clear. It's very clear. One example as well of this, her lady in this area, her father was murdered some years ago, and she called me up a few months after the funeral service saying that she's really struggling to process what's gone on, as expected. And she came here to have a cup of tea with me, just to have a chat to me in the arrangement room and just to catch up. I said to her, would it help to see the chapel arrest where your dad was? It's now empty. I can show you that space. And she said, yes, yeah. And she wasn't sure if she'd be allowed to do that. So I took her in the chapel arrest. She's like, I remember now. I remember coming in here to see dad. I said, well, this is where it was. So would it help to see the mortuary space where he was? I said, it's all clear. It's all empty. She was surprised that she was allowed to go up there. I said, well, why wouldn't you be? Took her up to the mortuary space. Oh, wow. So I said, he would have come through these doors here. This is what would have happened. Went through it all with her. And again, I witnessed the unknowns being removed. So the fear then lessened. I even showed her the workshop where the coffin was made for her father. And again, it made things so much more clearer for her. And I believe that helps people move forward even further.
You mentioned just now that we need to rethink funerals as, and largely as a result of the popularity of direct cremation. So what do you think we should do differently?
Again, it's these conversations, making people aware what is possible, making people aware the importance of connection when someone dies. I think some, I speak to people, the marketing around direct cremation is why have all that fuss? Why go through all that pain? Like, surely this is an easy option for you. Just have them cremated, have the ashes back, and take away all that hassle, all that stress. Having a hearse on the day of the funeral coming to the house. Wow, that sounds like a lot, that does. Having us all dress up in suits. What? No, thank you. Let's keep it really simple. Let's just get mom cremated, get the ashes back, and we'll sprinkle ashes in the garden. Perfect. What a solution to a problem. The reality is a family feeling the weight of the coffin into a crematorium chapel. That's important, in my opinion. Having the community come together to say goodbye to somebody. You are grieving together. Why do we have weddings with the community there? Why do we do that? We have that. So it's an act of togetherness. We come together to witness a moment in time. It's the same with a funeral. We come together to grieve together, to then move forward. We haven't just made up a funeral to give ourselves jobs. The funeral is an important ancient role and tradition in society to say goodbye to somebody. The Queen's funeral, we had thousands of people that lined up to see her coffin. So let's say the Queen was like, actually, I know you all want to see my coffin, but I don't want that. I want to keep it really easy for Charles and for William. So I want to have a direct cremation instead. But what about everybody else, Queen? Well, it's not really about you. It's my day. It's my funeral, not yours. Okay, no problem at all then. Those thousands of people. Did they get reassurance? Did they get some hope? Did they get some grief? Were they able to grieve and move forward with their grief by going to see her coffin and paying their respects and bowing their heads? They weren't doing it for a show. They were doing it because it mattered to them. So again, acts of togetherness and what I call them as connection points. So I see it again. Another example was a young man took his own life. His mom was with me next door arranging the funeral service. I could see she was very agitated, very just anxious, like a nervous wreck, as expected. Her son has taken his life. There's nothing worse than that in this world. And I said, before I begin my arrangements, are there any things you want to ask me about or talk to me about? I thought, let's get her off, put things on her mind. Let's get those dealt with now before we move forward, because otherwise you won't be able to concentrate or think about what I'm saying. And so I want to come and see him. I must come and see him. I need to see him. I need to see him. I said, that's fine. And then straight away my response was, just so you know, if you wanted to come to the mortuary space to help prepare your son, you can do that as well. Oh, yes. Oh, yes, please, please. Like desperation. But what it was, it's control. A lack of control was now taking over her whole body and world. And suddenly she was given some control back. And I witnessed again the mortuary space. I was stood behind her. My colleague Darren was there looking after her. I thought, just stand back, allow him to do his job, support her. I'm just here to support to her and to him if they need me. And there was just gentle conversation between them. And she said, I was the first person to put his socks on, and now I'll be the last. And that isn't morbid. That was really important. And she was a nervous wreck when she walked in here. And then afterwards, after she'd helped prepare him, she was at ease. I saw it. And actually, she even like made a little, she was like a little gentle giggle about something, I'm not saying she was over it. Of course she wasn't, but she was in a better place. She'd been handed control back to her. So again, that's another example. So I think The definition of a funeral, we need to look at that. I don't have the answer for that yet, but I think it's more about an experience over a period of time rather than a singular moment in time.
We'd like to, sorry, go on.
Not after you.
I was going to say, I'd like to put a word in for direct cremations with a gathering. They don't have to be separate. And I do find a lot of people think that a direct cremation just involves sending the body off. It's not necessary not to get together afterwards, is it? Or and at another time.
Well, it's really important to state this, that funeral directors all over the country have been doing this for many, many years, direct cremations, in a similar way. But now the marketing of it is obviously they're spending millions of pounds per quarter on TV advertisement, the big companies are. And a funeral director like ourselves and many other funeral directors across the country, we will provide a direct cremation. And families will still come down to us. It takes place early in the morning. That's why it's cheaper. But the people will come down here and help place the coffin onto the ambulance or the hearse if they decide to upgrade to a hearse. And 90% of the time, it's an ambulance. But the family will help place their loved one's coffin onto the ambulance. And again, they are suddenly now they are involved. And I witnessed this actually. There was, I think it was two or three sons were in the arrangement room a couple of years ago with me. And they want mom wanted to have a direct cremation. I said, that's absolutely fine. Just so you know what is possible, you can be here at X time to do A, B, C, D. You can come and see mom in the chapel rest still. You can go to the crematorium to watch the coffin go into the chapel. Oh, no, John, no, she didn't want any of that. She's wanted a direct cremation, John, and that's what we'll do for her. So that's fine. It doesn't change the cost at all, but I want just to let you know these things are possible if you want to do them. No, not for us, John. So great, that's fine. Not before the funeral service was due to take place or the cremation was due to take place. Had a phone call, actually, John, we'll come down in the morning. They came down in the morning, they took a handle of the coffin each with our team, placed it onto the ambulance, and then I'm sure it was three sons, not two, three sons, they all hugged each other and were in tears in our driveway. And again, I'm watching it going, they need that. They need that outlet. They need that connection. They need that space to say goodbye to their mom. And that doesn't mean to say you need to have a hearse and six limousines. It just means that you need to have, we need to, we need, we or society needs to allow a space to facilitate people's grief. That's for me is the key part of this.
And essentially, what you're saying, and I love what you're saying, is that we all need to be more involved in everything, don't we? In talking about it before we lose people, and then in the process of what happens when we do lose people. And hopefully, what you're doing with children in schools means that as the younger generation grow up, they'll be carrying that message forward and educating their parents as well, won't they?
I believe so. I believe 2 to 3 generations it'll be normalized in society. And yeah, I'm very optimistic about the outcomes. I hope that we can have a kinder society, a more caring society, a less selfish society. So I'm very optimistic and I'm very excited for the future.
More power to your elbow. Thank you, John, ever so much for talking to me.
You're so welcome. I've really enjoyed it. Thank you so much.
Death is never easy, but there are ways we can help each other through it. And if you've found any of these episodes helpful, please think about liking and sharing. And if you can help spread the word by telling just one other person, thank you. And a huge thanks to Joe Barrett, without whom these podcasts would simply not be possible. You can contact us on hello@livingwithdying.co.uk.